Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, January 7th. The official January 6th anniversary commemorations are over, but concern for our democracy persists. And so does a debate that's been breaking out over Attorney General Merrick Garland's approach to criminal investigations of Trump himself and others in his orbit who may be legally, criminally responsible, not just the hundreds of actual rioters who have now been charged. We'll have Morgan State professor and political commentator Jason Johnson on this question and more in just a minute. But I want to set this up with a couple of excerpts from a speech that Attorney General Garland gave on Wednesday. I think it kind of got downplayed and lost a little bit in the news cycle in favor of the more fiery speech that President Biden gave yesterday. So here is about a minute and a half of the Attorney General kind of addressing progressives' unhappiness with him that Trump and others at the top of the January 6th food chain remain uncharged.
The Justice Department remains committed to holding all January 6th perpetrators at any level accountable under law, whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible for the assault on our democracy. We will follow the facts wherever they lead. Because January 6th was an unprecedented attack on the seat of our democracy, we understand that there is broad public interest in our investigation. We understand that there are questions about how long the investigation will take and about what exactly we are doing. Our answer is, and will continue to be, the same answer we would give to, with respect to any ongoing investigation. As long as it takes, and whatever it takes, for justice to be done consistent with the facts and the law. I understand that this may not be the answer some are looking for, but we will and we must speak through our work. Anything else jeopardizes the viability of our investigations and the civil liberties of our citizens.
Attorney General Merrick Garland on Wednesday, and I'll add one more clip of 13 seconds from that speech where he refers to how complex prosecutions work when there are underlings and kingpins.
In complex cases, initial charges are often less severe than later charged offenses. This is purposeful, as investigators methodically collect and sift through more evidence.
And with that, we welcome Morgan State University journalism professor Jason Johnson, who is also a political contributor to MSNBC and The Griot, and hosts the podcast A Word with Jason Johnson. He's also author of the book Political Consultants and Campaigns, One Day to Sell. Dr. Johnson, Happy New Year. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so very much. I am glad to be here, although it's been a rough way to start the year, and this is the kind of thing we're going to be dealing with all throughout the midterms.
That is for sure, and we're going to definitely get to the midterms in this conversation. But could you describe, for listeners who may not even be engaged in this yet, the debate around how the Attorney General is investigating January 6th and how much his speech on Wednesday that we played the clips from there satisfied you or anyone who's been critical of him? I see you retweeted Dean Obadala, who was dismayed by what he saw as a lack of urgency in that speech.
Yeah, so the debate, Brian, the debate falls down to two basic sides. Do you have general trust in the government to hold, to investigate and hold the people responsible for the insurrection accountable, right? Do you believe in the government? Do you think, okay, you know, the government's gonna work it out? Or do you actually pay attention to the history of Merrick Garland and Robert Mueller and everything else that's actually happened? So I tend to fall on the evidence-based side. There is no evidence in Merrick Garland's past, his present, or anything that he said yesterday that would give anyone the impression that he has the heart, the fortitude, the political will, or the intention to hold people responsible who endangered our very democracy last year. And that's pretty much the fault lines. And the problem is that while he gave a speech yesterday, sort of in response to the public criticism that he's getting, there doesn't seem to be anything that will get him to show greater urgency, because what I heard yesterday was a ridiculous word salad with no dressing, where he didn't even have the commitment to what he's investigating to say that this is a problem that has its roots, its genesis, and its catalyst in the Republican Party and Donald Trump. He still said things like, you know, this is not a one-sided political problem. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We know where this came from. It came from the Republican Party. It came from Donald Trump. It came from his rally. It comes from Josh Hawley. It comes from Marjorie Taylor Greene. You can't both sides an attempted coup and insurrection. And that unfortunately represents an attitude that I think is going to endanger us all as this year continues.
There's a difference between political culpability and criminal culpability, though, right? And and he's the attorney general, so he's only concerned with crimes. And I think he was referring, and I almost pulled this excerpt, but I don't have it, in the you know, excerpt that you were just referring to, where he talked about not one side being responsible. I think he was talking about a general degeneration into people being more prone to violence. I think he was saying on airplanes and in stores. And January 6th is another, although obviously very extreme and belongs in a category by itself, example of that.
So here's the problem. We still know where most of this behavior comes from. If the vast majority of time that somebody is eating up the vegetables in your garden, you don't make the world a better place by saying this is a rabbit and a squirrel and occasionally a gopher problem. No, it's rabbits. Okay. Rabbits are eating your lettuce. Rabbits are eating your carrots. You need to do something. You need to set traps and put out poison or call in animal control and deal with the rabbits. And if you're dealing with someone who keeps trying to spread the blame and say that this is a universal problem, it's not helpful. Here's the thing. We know that the violence against public officials is mostly from the far right. We know that the violence and threats against local election officials, right, and school boards, we know that comes from the far right. We know that anti-mask, anti-vax people who are causing fights in airports and attacking airline stewards and pilots and everything else like that, we know that comes from the far right. We know this. So to suggest that this is a problem that comes from the right and left is ridiculous. And it would be one thing if he said, hey, look, we got political violence happening throughout the country and we need to do something about it. And he wanted to talk about protests last year. Okay, I guess. But remember, those protests were in the context of state-sponsored violence against unarmed Black people. So again, this sort of both sides protection of the institution as opposed to disruptive justice that seems to be the want and the will of people like Merrick Garland and Robert Mueller before him endangers this entire country, because the Republican Party and the right-wing elements hiding within that party, they know exactly what they're doing. And they're perfectly happy to see an administration and a DOJ pretend that they may be part of the problem as opposed to the crux of the problem.
Let me ask you, from a kind of observing the Department of Justice in particular standpoint, whether you think there is a crime worth charging Trump with, or whether that would just lead to a political free-for-all that wouldn't address criminality and might be bad for democracy. I'll lay out what some other people are saying in this question, which asks, is it possible that Trump, though he deserved to be impeached for inciting an insurrection, that would be a political act, didn't commit any actual criminal acts in connection with that? Yes, he perpetrated the big lie about a stolen election, but politicians lying isn't generally a crime, or prisons would be bursting with them. Yes, he called that rally on January 6th and told his followers to march to the Capitol and fight like hell, but lots of progressive movement leaders urge their followers to fight like hell. They say no justice, no peace, which I think you'll agree is not an incitement to riot.
Right.
Trump also said, go there peacefully, in another line from the rally, and refusing for 3 hours during the riot to publicly tell them to go home. Well, some legal analysts say that failure is heinous, but there's no law on the books that mandates a public statement. So what's Trump's actual crime, if you think Merrick Garland has one to prosecute?
Well, there are several, and I'll start with the crimes that he has right in front of him. Robert Mueller laid out 10 examples of obstruction. Robert Mueller gave the federal government a blueprint, a map with a big X at the end of 10 different instances of obstruction of justice.
In the Russia investigation.
Those things are crimes. Donald Trump and many people in his administration, including members of his family, could be prosecuted for those crimes. I mean, Mueller himself said, hey, look, I mean, and I think he kind of punted the ball on this. He's like, all I can do is tell you these are crimes are committed. It's up to Congress or DOJ or somebody else to handle this. But these are crimes. So Merrick Garland, right off the bat, has plenty of things that he could prosecute Trump for. And let's not be crazy about the idea. You know, you talk about Al Capone. No, they never caught him for being a mob boss. They caught the guy for not paying taxes. We know that there are plenty of terrible, horrible, illegal things that Trump committed.
And they're investigating him for that in New York State, as you know, and that might be the most likely thing for him to get prosecuted for.
Exactly. But here's the other problem with this. You know, fomenting insurrection or trying to take over the government is actually against the law. And Donald Trump didn't just send people to try to take over the government. Remember, Mark Meadows and his whole team had a whole PowerPoint, had a Prezi presentation on how to take over the government based on a lie that they knew was a lie. So that's not complicated. If you or I, Brian, or anyone listening right now, try to take over the government in more than just words, if we put together documentation to accomplish that task, if we sent people to assist us in that task, if we encourage other people to continue to give us information and plans to accomplish that task, they weren't just talking about ways to win an election. They were talking about ways to break the law.
So you're saying that there could be a criminal offense in, let's say, putting out laws that encourage members of Congress to cast peaceful votes to throw the election back to the states and those state legislatures to overturn the results.
Well, what I'm saying is when you put together a PowerPoint that says, hey, we need to overthrow this, and then you say, try to intimidate the Secretary of State in Georgia, right? And then you send a mob to do it. That is a conspiracy to overthrow the government through extra legal means. And that's against the law. There's laws against insurrection. So, you know, when people argue that, well, maybe he did something bad, but it wasn't necessarily illegal, I think they're being disingenuous. That's sort of like saying, well, okay, you know, this person beat their kids and threw them down a flight of stairs and sold them out to drug dealers, but we don't know if that's illegal. Actually, child endangerment's against the law.
Well, let me take a couple of Merrick Garland calls that are coming in before we go to the break and turn the page to some other things. Anne in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Morgan State University professor, MSNBC and Griot political contributor, Jason Johnson. Hi, Anne.
Hello, and thank you so much for taking my call. Great conversation. And in terms of Merrick Garland, I think that he's once again just playing politics and trying to look like the neutral guy, you know, in all of this disaster. And I understand he's an attorney general. I understand he's not supposed to come across as political. But I think, you know, if you just remove the politics from it completely and look at it as criminality, which is it's complete criminality, it's a conspiracy to overthrow our government. And I think that's pretty clear. And I just think that he needs to be much more aggressive and he needs to be, you know, steadfast in getting this resolved. But I'm afraid that, you know, we're going to start focusing on the midterms and maybe this is all going to go, you know, away. I hope that he just really pursues this with all, you know, with all of his might and stop playing politics and try and stop coming across as neutral. You know, it needs to be aggressive. And that's really what I'm, and I just don't want it to turn into another, you know, Mueller thing. Okay, thank you.
And thank you very much. All right, we're going to go to Orlando and Astoria next, who might have a different point of view on Garland. Hi, Orlando. You're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for taking my call. Love the show. Personally, I'm very worried about polarization in this country. I feel like, you know, while I definitely want to see Trump completely brought to justice and all these people that don't care about, you know, our country or basically, you know, our values, the values that we've been brought up for, you know, I don't know how we're going to win the hearts and minds of people that basically have been duped. Everything that it seems to me every time we push hard, It's like the extremism increases. And I can see why Merrick Garland, I mean, I don't know the reason, but I can see a reason for trying to not look so biased. So I just, to me, the bigger issue is how do we win hearts and minds? Because you can put all these people in prison and the problem is still there. This country is in danger. And that's where I'm concerned. So thank you for taking my call.
It sounds like you're a little concerned, Orlando, also that Trump would use the platform of a criminal trial, to put on a circus that would just attract more people to him. Is that part of what I hear you saying?
Yeah, but it's not just about Trump. I mean, I have no faith in his ability to change himself. And I'm an idealist. I don't ever see him changing himself to any kind of a better person. Even if he's gone, the woodwork, the worms are there to replace him. So, what is it? How do we fix that? Yeah.
Orlando, thank you so much. Jason, talk to those two callers.
So the first thing I'll say is, I believe her name was Anne. She makes a really good point. There doesn't have to be a contrast between neutrality and urgency. That's the problem, right? Like Merrick Garland and his defenders have been trying to sell us the story that this has to take a long time because he's trying to be neutral. Since when? You know, justice delay. He said in his speech yesterday, he's like, we're gonna take as long as it takes. Well, no, we don't actually have that long. And justice delayed is justice denied. If the Republican Party takes over the House, let alone the Senate, by this fall, they will end the January 6th investigation, which means the additional information that he's working from won't be available.
Right. But they, I think he says, he doesn't say it's taking so long because he's trying to be neutral. I think he says he's taking so long because, the analogy to the mob investigation always comes up, right? You go after the little fish who are more vulnerable. They flip the big fish eventually. And people say that's what he's doing with all these arrests of people who are the actual Capitol rioters. We see some of them using a defense. Trump made me do it.
Here's the problem with that. Is Rebay really going to is he going to flip on Stringer Bell? No, Stringer was still having dinner with the mayor. Right. Like you can chase all the corner boys you want. It doesn't necessarily. That's a Wire reference for anybody that's in it.
Yeah.
You can chase all the corner boys you want. OK, the Viking shaman probably can't tell you much about whether or not Jim Jordan was involved in this. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people who they caught at the Capitol who could be useful in that. But I'm also suggesting that this sort of small fish that they're grabbing, when you have the entire Mueller report next to you, that is a silly and unnecessarily long-winded way of going at the same problem. The second thing I want to mention is this, is the second caller said, hey, do we change hearts and minds? No. You got to remember, America isn't that polarized. The majority of the country has said, we want this policy. We want these Democrats. What you have are small numbers of loud people, right? The 30% of the population that loves Trump, the two or three senators who don't want to provide people with free health care and additional access to resources that they need in the middle of a pandemic. That ain't how the majority feels. The majority of the country wants Build Back Better. The majority of the country wanted health care reform. The majority of the country wanted Joe Biden. But unfortunately, we have a media that sometimes suggests that polarization is happening when really it's only 30% that is dragging down the other 70 because people don't have the political will to say, hey, that 30%, sorry, you lost, forget about it. We're going to hold you accountable if you try and take over the government, and we're going to actually serve what the majority of the public wants.
How do you think Democrats can thread the needle in the coalition that is fragile and that they built for the moment? That they're always trying to thread the needle between maximizing turnout by the passionate base, let's say, and not alienating the white suburban swing voters who did give them their congressional majority in 2018 by being disgusted by Trump in those districts, but might see the Democrats' agenda as progressive overreach.
I think the white suburbanites are overstated. And the reason I say that is because the suburbs in Detroit are full of all sorts of kinds of people. The suburbs of Indianapolis aren't just white folks. The suburbs are now full of the emerging population. We got to remember that the majority of people in this country under the age of 15 now, they're not white and their parents are living in suburbs. So what the Democrats have to do is stop their unnecessary and ridiculous obsession with these mythical white suburbanites and their Lululemon and their Pumpkin Spice and their Crocs, and recognize that the suburbs are filled with Black and Asian and Latino and all sorts of different kinds of people. And the number one issue that suburbanites have been concerned about for the last 18 months is, what the heck are you going to do about my kids in schools when it comes to COVID? And you need to have a coherent and consistent national plan. You need to have a coherent and consistent idea for what kids are going to do with schooling. We don't hear enough of that from the federal government. If the head of Delta, and I don't mean the variant, I mean the airlines, can make a suggestion that quarantine should go from 10 days to 5 because they want to force people back into schools, that's the kind of thing that leaves people thinking there is no leadership. So address things like education, give voting rights for Black people, do something about police reform, which was more than in Joe Biden's power. You can't give extra COVID money to police departments and then let the George Floyd Policing Act die in the same 2 weeks. These are the clear low-hanging fruit that Democrats could accomplish in the next 6 months to improve their chances this fall.
Jason Johnson, Morgan State University journalism professor, political contributor to MSNBC and The Griot. By the way, it was good to see you hosting some on MSNBC in the last few weeks. Nice job filling in there.
And much appreciated.
Good to see you in the host chair. And he's also the host of his own podcast, A Word with Jason Johnson. Look forward to keep having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Brian. Happy New Year.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.